From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, March 4th, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 25 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath. Open 7 days a week.
President Donald Trump today implemented his long-promised tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China, the 25% import tax on most Canadian goods, and a 10% tax on energy imports. Could have particularly acute consequences in Maine, which did some $6 billion worth of trade with its northern neighbor last year. To explain more about what this all means, Maine Public's Ari Snyder spoke with University of Maine political science professor Kristen Vicasey.
So there's been so much uncertainty with these tariffs about whether they were going to happen, when they were going to happen. Has that uncertainty already had an impact on the economy in Maine or across the country?
Well, when there are risks like this, business risks, companies already do need to start planning for that. And so you see in a lot of different industries, under this uncertainty, a lot of planning, thinking about what alternative markets might be. And the alternatives usually are more expensive. So the reason that we have the supply chains and the trade that we have is because it makes business sense. It typically makes economic sense. It often makes geographic sense. And so trying to find alternatives already means that you're looking at things that are more costly, trying to figure out where to cut down here, cut down there.
And do we have a sense yet of how this all is going to impact Maine?
So we have some predictions, although it's incredibly hard to know what is going to play out. So Maine's largest trading partner by far is Canada, and one of our largest imports is energy. And so the tariff level on energy is lower. So it's, again, only 10% compared to the 25%. But one of the broad predictions that we can make for the tariff conflict with Canada is that energy prices will go up. We also see, of course, our lobster industry that has a lot of intersections with Canada, and we have a pretty integrated lobster supply chain with Canada in terms of processing and shipping and trading off on seasonality. We also see plenty of places that rely on steel imports and aluminum imports. That's something that we would expect to see costs go up for Maine manufacturers. We also can expect to see this with some of the lumber and paper industries that also do a lot of cross-border work. And I want to point out that these are really long-term relationships, that this new policy will introduce the highest trade barriers that we've had between Canada and the United States since 1940.
Is there any risk or any possibility that some of these trading relationships could be permanently damaged and that countries like Canada and Mexico might just look to other countries to do the bulk of their trading?
There are two different answers to that question. These sorts of political shocks are often what kick countries into gear and kick business people into gear into making painful choices about how they're going to diversify. And we have lots of examples of that. So it's certainly possible that we will see this leading to different market patterns and more of a permanent kind of, or at least medium long-term kind of rupture. On the other hand, the biggest predictors of who you trade with is who are you close to and do you have a shared language? And those are strong predictors that the United States and Canada are going to be pulled back together. I think the other thing that's important to note about this particular set of trade frictions is some of the responses from the United States as trade partners. One of those is that Canada is ready and very willing to use harsh retaliatory measures, which we haven't seen before, but the suddenness of this, the lack of compromise that we see has really led to a new sense of nationalism and nationalist movements in Canada, where they're willing to take these very harsh measures in response to very harsh measures.
And how soon might consumers start to notice changes?
I think with energy, it will be a lot faster because that's something that flows. With other products, it will depend on what sort of cushion we have in terms of stock. I think in terms of agricultural products coming from Mexico, we'll probably start to see that effect in a couple of weeks, is my prediction. But again, energy will probably be much sooner.
That's University of Maine political science professor Kristen Vicasey speaking with Maine Public's Ari Snyder. Now, as you just heard, Maine consumers will likely see increased prices of gas, home heating oil, and electricity because of the president's new tax on imported Canadian energy. But as Peter McGuire reports, the precise effect of tariffs and how long they might last are still unclear.
About 80% of the gasoline, diesel, and home heating oil burned in Maine comes from across the northern border. That leaves the state vulnerable to a 10% tariff on imports from Canada, says John Gulliver, president of the New England Canada Business Council.
And I think it is fair to say we are heavily reliant on our trade, both imports and occasionally exports, of energy products of different kinds to Canada, to and from Canada.
Irving Oil, which owns the New Brunswick refinery that makes most of Maine's petroleum products, says tariffs will increase prices for U.S. consumers. And impacts could be felt swiftly as fuel dealers draw down existing stocks of Canadian fossil fuels. Gulliver says that could ripple across the economy.
A disruption of this kind of proportion will have only economic pain and adverse impact, short term and intermediate term and probably long term, across the border for our two peoples.
And for nearly 60,000 power customers in northern and eastern Maine, it may be a direct hit. That's because they're exclusively tied to the New Brunswick power grid. Van Buren Light and Power manager Bill Schofield says the tariff will cost the consumer-owned utility $120,000 more per year. He says that will jack up annual bills by almost $100 for 1,300 ratepayers in the Aroostook County border town. The utility is currently negotiating a new contract with its Canadian power supplier.
Most everyone understands that we're doing the best that we can for them. Ultimately, we don't have an option.
The Trump administration enacted tariffs on Canada and Mexico after a month-long reprieve. But Charlie Summers, president of the Maine Energy Marketers Association, says the trade group is still trying to understand how tariffs will be rolled out and what the effect will be on consumers.
We're working to try and interface with the administration and get a clear picture of exactly what this may in fact look like a week from now, a month from now.
Energy is just one example of how Maine's economy is intertwined with its northern neighbor, the reason elected officials have warned a trade war could have serious consequences for the state. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
Maine's Commissioner of Marine Resources is also warning about the dire impacts of newly imposed tariffs on Canadian imports. Maine sends about $200 million worth of lobster each year to Canada, where it's processed and sent back to the U.S., or to third markets. And during an appearance on Maine Calling today, Marine Resources Commissioner Pat Kelleher says the tariffs could trigger major cuts in what Maine lobstermen are paid for their catch.
The only way for this to be made up on the cost perspective is at the boat price. And so I am very concerned going into this year that we are going to see all-time low boat prices. And if we see with the declining volume of lobster, we will see potentially hundreds of people going out of business because of these tariffs.
In response, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has announced a first round of tariffs on U.S. imports that went into effect today. Lobster was not on the list, but Trudeau has promised additional rounds of retaliatory tariffs. Hundreds of educators protested at the State House this morning against Governor Janet Mills' proposed cuts to a state stipend program that many say has helped stabilize the child care industry. Maddie Smith has more.
Please don't take my child care away.
More than a dozen child care centers across Maine shut down today, and more than 200 educators, parents, and young children showed up to protest the proposal to slash a stipend program that provides between $240 and $540 a month to educators based on their education and experience. Amy McPheeters from South Portland brought her 4-year-old foster daughter, Ryan, to the protest because she's concerned about the future of Ryan's care.
I'm worried about the future of her accessing childcare and her teacher's ability to stay at childcare if they're not paid adequate wages.
Morgan Tolan, event organizer and co-executive director at the Maine Association for Education of Young Children, says the cuts would cause a $2,000 annual decrease in childcare workers' wages and would lead people to leave the field. The Health and Human Services Committee is set to vote on the proposed cuts on Wednesday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
The Republican pressure campaign to compel Maine to comply with President Donald Trump's executive order banning transgender athletes from competing in sports continued in Augusta today. Steve Missler reports.
Several Republican women state lawmakers held a press event to frame the issue as an infringement of women's rights by men. Representative Tina Smith of Palermo is the assistant minority leader in the House.
We are a determined and unyielding group, and our voices, echoing those of women from the past, will not be quieted as we defend girls' rights to feel safe, compete fairly, claim the honors they've earned, and speak freely. Our resolve to uphold the president's executive order is ironclad.
Smith stood alongside other Republican women wearing white, a reference to the women's suffrage movement and a form of protest to show solidarity with Representative Laurel Libby. Libby was recently censured by Democrats in the House for targeting a transgender high school student in a social media post. The post blurred the identities of two other girls, but not the transgender student. Under the censure order, Libby cannot vote until she apologizes. Her post touched off a confrontation between President Trump and Governor Janet Mills at the White House nearly 2 weeks ago. It's also sparked interest in an anti-doxing bill that would allow family members to sue anyone who posts personal information about a child that could lead to harassment or violence. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Lots of activity in Augusta today as several hundred people gathered again outside the Maine State House to protest the Trump administration's agenda. Participants carried handmade signs denouncing Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, and Elon Musk. And speakers like Kim Moody portrayed the grassroots rallies as evidence of growing concern about the direction of the country under Trump.
We must not accept their rhetoric that we are un-American. That we are unpatriotic. The opposite is true.
This was the latest in a string of rallies at the State House in recent weeks. Previous anti-Trump rallies have drawn hundreds. And last weekend, a large crowd protested following Democratic Governor Janet Mills' high-profile clash with Trump over the issue of transgender athletes. A new coalition called the Alliance for Responsible Cannabis in Maine is backing a bill that would require testing for potency and contaminants in the medical cannabis market. Democratic Representative Mark Mallon, the bill's sponsor, says such testing is already required for recreational cannabis, and Maine is far behind national standards.
In fact, out of dozens of states with medical cannabis programs, Maine is the only one which does not require testing.
An audit by Maine's Office of Cannabis Policy found that more than 40% of medical cannabis samples contained contaminants, including pesticides, mold, and heavy metals. But Tammy Smith of Medical Marijuana Caregivers of Maine says the testing system for the recreational market is flawed and needs to be fixed before requiring testing in the medical market. Hundreds of employees at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have been let go in the latest round of the Trump administration's federal workforce reduction efforts. Some in attendance at this past weekend's Fishermen's Forum in Rockport say they're concerned that the cuts may have safety and economic implications for their industry. Molly Ann King brings us this story.
More than 2,000 people turned out for the annual forum to take in gear expos, panel discussions, and catch up with old friends. But there was an undercurrent of uncertainty after news broke of hundreds of layoffs at NOAA in both the Fisheries Division and the National Weather Service. At a panel on federal fisheries management, one NOAA speaker was absent and the other declined to answer questions about how the cuts might affect local fisheries. Devin Campbell is a 24-year-old fisherman out of Boothbay Harbor, Maine. He says he compulsively checks his weather apps throughout the day, scrolling them more often than social media.
Your life is so dependent on it that it's just something you have to always look at. It's a constant.
National Weather Service data feed practically every weather app mariners use. Accurate data, including wind and wave height, are essential to fishermen's safety and their bottom line, says Jim Buxton of Peaks Island.
Steaming for 3 hours in the dark to get there to haul their first string at daylight, say 6 o'clock in the morning, and if the conditions get terrible, they have to steam back for 3 hours and make no money. This is for real.
Buxton says it's imperative for fishermen that forecasts get more accurate, not less.
When they forecast a bad weather day and it doesn't happen and you choose not to go, that has a real economic cost. And when they forecast a good day and that doesn't happen, there's actually a human risk where people are out in conditions that they don't expect and they potentially could get hurt.
Andy Hazelton worked at the National Weather Service's Hurricane Research Division before he was laid off last week. He says they were already understaffed before he and a dozen colleagues were let go.
I think it's going to make things more dangerous. It risks reversing the progress we've made because we've seen huge improvements in hurricane forecasts and things like that over the last 30 years, and it risks reversing that and making the public, less safe as a result.
Hazelton says his colleagues who are still working at the National Weather Service are busy sorting through all the projects he and others left behind. He's still hoping some of the jobs might be reinstated once officials realize the importance of NOAA's work. News also broke at the Fishermen's Forum Saturday that the University of Maine's multi-million-dollar Sea Grant, which supports everything from lobster population research to coastal storm recovery, would be shuttered. Maine has been a Sea Grant recipient since 1971. In fact, the program helped to found the Fishermen's Forum in the 1980s. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
The publisher of the Portland Press Herald and other newspapers is announcing a move away from print. Maine Trust for Local News Managing Director Stephanie Manning says the changes reflect fiscal realities.
Print, which is still the predominant part of our business, is declining at an ever more rapid pace. And readers are more and more online.
Beginning next month, the Sun Journal, Kennebec Journal, and Morning Sentinel will be printed 5 days a week, down from six, and be delivered by the U.S. Postal Service. Many of the Trust's free weekly newspapers will reduce or eliminate their printed editions, with their content moved online. The Trust says 49 positions will be eliminated, but none will involve reporters. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll learn about Maine's amphibian species and how to conserve them. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.